You're listening to the Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers, episode 125, Song of the Sea. Did I mention I was the Great Stone Giant? Welcome, welcome, animation fans, to the Rotoscopers, Animation Addicts Podcast with the Rotoscopers. I guess it's been a while since I've last done it. Anyway, episode 125, we've got Disney, we've got DreamWorks, Pixar, Don Bluth, Cartoon Saloon, and everything in between. I'm your host, Mason, and I'm here with my lovely co-hosts, Morgan Stradling and Chelsea Robson. Say hello.
Hello.
Hi, friends.
We want to welcome you if this is your first time listening or watching, and if you're a recurring watcher slash listener, then welcome back. We love you guys. If you don't know what the format of the show is, it's really easy. Think of us as your three nerdy animation fans who love animation. I don't just like animation. I love it. And if I don't love it, I don't open my eyes or something like that.
I don't watch it.
I don't swallow. It's just animation. Anyway. Basically, if you close your eyes and imagine yourself on like a comfy couch and like a cool like living room with all these animation paraphernalia around you, and we're all just sitting there talking about animation together and what we love about our favorite animated films, this is the show for that. And so basically we review mainly we review one animated film per episode. And today's is Song of the Sea. We've got an amazing show for you. We're going to go off on all sorts of fun tangents and hopefully get some quotes going and some really crappy fake Irish accents.
Yes. And
I know all of our European listeners love it when I bust that out. To which I would challenge them to try their best redneck accent from South Texas. We'll see, right? Anyway, today's episode is actually a patron pick. You'll pardon the alliteration. I'm like the teacher on That's So Raven who always spat on everyone. So we want to thank Angela for picking this patron pick prominently put on our podcast production. Thanks to Angela and her support and all of our other patron supporters like her. We are able to do the video format. We are able to get good equipment and we're able to have better sound quality and things like that. And we're able to take your requests for episodes. So if you want in on that action, then go to rotoscopers.com/patron to learn more about how to support the show and earn these awesome perks. Picking our episodes is one of them. Mm-hmm. So thank you, Angela. Yes. And thank you to all of our Patreon subscribers.
Yes, thank you. Also, there are going to be full spoilers. So if you've never seen this film, you should probably watch it if that's going to bother you.
Spoilers, spoilers.
As all of our episodes are full spoilers, full discussion, you've been warned.
So this is actually a movie that has been requested by quite a few people. There are other patrons who, so when they submit their requests, they submit two movies just in case one of the movies, someone who was a patron before them chooses that, then we have a backup. And I guess if both their backups get picked, we'll pick another one. But this was on a lot of people's lists, and a lot of people in the patron group have been talking about it on Facebook. So I know that Vanessa, this was one of hers. And then I also know that Rachel has been talking about this a lot. So this is very, very highly requested. I think also people who email us and say, hey, I'd love it if you did this movie. I'd love it if you did this movie. Song of the Sea comes up quite a bit. So I'm really excited that we're finally able to do it.
Let's do this.
So let's just dive right into it, shall we?
Let's do it.
This is an ancient shell that my mother gave me a long time ago. Hold it to your ear and listen carefully. You will hear the song of the sea.
Mom? I'm so sorry.
Say hello to Saoirse.
Safe.
in this awful place.
Ugh, Granny. She's going to try and make us move to the city again.
At last, we found her!
Saoirse! Run!
Those stories that Mum told me, they're all true. Are you really a Selkie?
Are connected, and we'll all share in our fate.
I have to find her.
So first and foremost, let's give a little background, right? As we always do, this information comes straight to you from the good old Wikipedia/IMDb and Box Office Mojo. That's where we aggregate all of our information.
Hi, everybody. I'm Katie Segal.
And I'm Kurt Sutter.
And welcome to our new podcast called Pi: People, Influences, and Experiences.
Yes, it's sort of the get to know you at a deeper level, the who, what, when, where, and why you are, rather than what it is you do.
Absolutely. We're not going to talk too much about what people do. We just want to know about their families, where they come from, you know, what shapes their parenting if they have kids, what shapes their marriages if they're married. We just want to be really nosy. We want to get in there.
A deep dive into nature and nurture.
And we started it because there are a lot of people that we don't know that we are curious about.
Right. And I have no friends. So for me, it's, you know.
Trying to get them out of the house.
Listen to it on whatever you listen to podcasts on.
Yeah, podcast, homecast.
Your podcasting apparatus. Watch it on the YouTube.
He's aging himself.
So the studio Big Farm, it was a co-production between Big Farm, Cartoon Saloon, and Digital Graphics. There was quite a few companies that were involved. Cartoon Saloon, we'll let Chelsea talk a little bit about their origins, but the director was Tom Moore. Budget was estimated to be...
It's just shy of about $6 million for this one.
Yes, and as far as theatrical performance, how it did in the box office worldwide, it did, is this correct, $1.5 million?
Yep.
And the home video market did $2.26 million, so it did much better.
Does home video include like streaming? Because I know it's on Amazon Prime.
This is only including DVD and Blu-ray sales. As far as this, that was just domestically how well it fared. So
am I reading this right, that it was only released in 48 theaters?
Yes.
Very, very limited release, hence the reason why it didn't do as well as one would think.
You could only make so much with so many theaters open.
Yes, based on how beloved this film is, you would think that it had a bigger following. But, yes. Anyway, so Chelsea, do you want to tell us a little bit about Cartoon Saloon?
Yes. So the director was Tom Moore, and he was one of the co-founders of Cartoon Saloon, and he helped co-found this in his final year at Belfremont, which is where he went to school, in 1998. His first two films, feature films, were Secret of the Kells, which we also haven't done yet, and I've heard nothing but fantastic things about them.
Oh, yeah, it's a good one.
And Song of the Sea in 2014, and both of them have received critical acclaim, and both were nominated for the Academy Award for Best Animated Feature Film. So, obviously, he's got a really good track record with that. Just a little bit more about him. In November of 2015, Moore announced that on his Tumblr blog and Facebook that his next animated film from Cartoon Saloon will be Wolf Walkers.
Dope,
to
man.
To be co-directed with Ross Stewart. So that should be really cool. The thing that I thought was really interesting about this was, as we were mentioning before, the budget was just shy of $6 million. And most of that budget came from the Irish Film Board. Which I didn't know that they had a film board, which, hey, I'm really glad that they do, because then this movie probably wouldn't have been made. And like I said, It was only released in about 48 theaters here domestically. I didn't have a lot of information that I could find international releases or anything, but it did about half and half here and there. And another thing, the release date was December 19th, 2014.
In the U.S., right?
In the U.S., yeah. And I think one of the other main reasons why it didn't fare too well, even in those 48 different theaters, was because in the family film demographic, that was the same week that it went up against Annie, the new modern adaptation of the musical.
Her?
And Night at the Museum, which was the final film for Robin Williams. So those are really hard to overcome. Really hard. So
interesting. Almost everyone I've met that has seen it is obsessed with it.
Yes.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
We do have in our voicemail section, we have a lot of love for it. And we do have some others who see the other side of the coin. So that is good.
Ooh, the dark side.
It'll be interesting to see how all three of us, what our opinions are. This was my first time having seen the movie. I remember when it came out, I really did want to go and see it, just was unable to get myself to actually go at that point in time. So I never did see it. And then when it was released, I just never got around to seeing it. For those who don't, those who would like to see it, we'll include a link to purchase it, to rent it on iTunes and Amazon. But if you are an Amazon Prime subscriber, at least in the U.S., this is part of Amazon Instant Video, and you can watch it for free. So no excuses there if you're a member of Amazon Prime.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. So while it was probably transparent from the get-go how I felt about Angry Birds movie, I don't think I'll be able to tack down my rating for this film until we actually get down to the moment of it in the podcast, because my brain right now is just this swirly-twirly pool of gumdrops about, you know, good and bad about the film. And I was trying to integrate a quote from Elf in there. Didn't work. So anyway, I
heard it coming and I liked it.
I really admire Cartoon Saloon. I'd be willing to bet that Wolfwalkers has something to do with Irish mythology. but who knows? It could be something like Skinwalkers in the U.S., you know?
So going back very quickly to the budget, or I think we like totally brushed over this, but the budget, let's repeat, was $6 million.
Yeah,
we have no excuse. You know that we've seen movies with even bigger budgets than this that are very horrible, don't look good. This is beautifully stunning.
Yeah,
so it's quite shocking that they were able to produce it on such a low budget by today's standards, and it is unanimous, like very beautiful, and it looks high quality. It doesn't look like it was made on a budget in the least,
dude.
At least from my perspective,
dude. I feel like all the cool art that they put into Secret of Kells, they just did it times two with this film. They really surpassed themselves, and I was super impressed by the artwork.
Mm-hmm. So was I. That was one of the first things that I noticed and continued to notice as the film went on.
You know what was the first thing that I noticed?
What?
That the mom was a sea witch. I knew from like the first 5 seconds, I was like, the song, the long hair, the cryptic speaking. I'm 30 seconds into this film and I already know what's going to happen.
Well, I did come up with my own little plot summary for this.
Ooh.
So a young Irish boy, Ben, learns that the stories his mother told him as a child of fairies, spirits, and shapeshifters are more fact than fiction and must use them to save the magical world and his little sister.
Well, look at you. You should be a synopsis writer. Fancy. Yeah, yeah.
That's an actual job, isn't it?
I'm sure it is. Someone does it somewhere.
Most of the things I saw on IMDb were like by unanimous. I'm like, well, this is mine.
Well, so very nice, Chelsea. So I think first thing we should talk about, which we have been a little bit, is talking about the art style. So this is a 2D animated film, and it in a time where we don't see much of that anymore. So it's kind of a breath of fresh air that we're able to see 2D animation. But this is far from the typical Disney animation 2D that we, you know, Western audiences are used to. It's much different than even Studio Ghibli films and their aesthetic. And I really love that Cartoon Saloon has their own unique look to them.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It closest thing to it. It's kind of very modern in a way and stylized where it could be akin to some of Cartoon Network's style. But
was I the only one who, okay, raise your hand if you've seen Secret of Kells. Morgan, have you seen it?
I've seen it, yes.
Okay. I thought that Secret of Kells, and maybe not so much this one, but Secret of Kells at least, looked like a combination of Danny Phantom and Samurai Jack in its artwork. And this one, not so much. The characters are a little more fleshed out, and they move in 3D space a little bit better. Like, not in the CG sense, but just in the, you know, the drawing. But yeah, you are absolutely right. It's this minimalist abstract design that like Cartoon Saloon is just like really, really mastered and taken down. Like everything, things look like a motion graphic. Like Cartoon Saloon really likes those kind of motion graphic-y styles of like backdrops and like characters and stuff.
It felt like a storybook, like an illustration translated to screen because it was very flat. But it just felt like this could be something you would read in a children's book. You know, there's one particular scene that really stood out to me, and it's very obscure, where they get dropped off by the bus, and then the bus goes up the road, and it's, you know, supposed to be going backwards, right, and getting smaller, but it just shows it going up.
Yeah.
And then it just disappears, and to me that was very much how this style was. It was very flat and side scroll in a way, but I liked it. And I really do think that one of the reasons this movie is so beloved is because of the art and because of the style, first and foremost. Like, I went to Rotten Tomatoes, and I have a link right here, and I'll include a link in the show notes, but I went to Rotten Tomatoes, and I was reading the reviews, and it is 99% fresh on Rotten Tomatoes. But if you read the actual positive reviews, it's all about the art. They said, right, like they use words constantly, like animation is stunningly beautiful, deceptive in its simplicity, dazzling in its visual presentation. Let's see, what else? Magic and mysticism inhabit this visual style. Breathtakingly beautiful, beautifully animated, beautiful, 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 beautiful. Like, that is just constantly the very first thing that gets mentioned as far as this film and why they rated it positive for the most part, at least from those little blurbs. I mean, obviously there's more to the reason why they liked the film. But let's talk about that. So,
I really love the artistry, the story, and like the pacing and the dialogue and the characters, on the other hand, I'm not so sure about. It's interesting, the very first scene, the first scene after the intro, I guess, let's call it the exposition, where, I don't even remember the dang boy's name, Ben, and then, what's the girl's name, Starmie?
Shersha.
Cedra?
Shersha.
No, that was a Pokemon.
Did you see how they spelled her Shersha. Name?
Yes.
Shersha. I know Mandarin Chinese, too.
It's spelled S-A-O-I-R-S-E.
Yeah, and I'm thinking, how in the world did you get Shersha from that?
Well, because it's translated from an Irish Scottish, which phonetically, when you're translating other languages, the way that they pronounce them, you know, when they're written out in the English, in, you know, English characters, are not necessarily how regular, not, or, you know, traditional English pronunciation
Shersha.
Is.
Right.
They have Shersha. A totally different, you know, they look at the same letters, but it's totally different. But
right. Cool.
All right, Searsha, I think I got it. Wanderlust Wings on the YouTube chat gave me a proper phonetic way to do it. Can I just establish one thing here? I'm very jealous of how cool Irish names are compared to North American names. Or, you know, England, Anglo-Saxon.
At least the girls.
Yeah, well, all no, the guys no, there's are like some Connor, cool dude Ben. Names. Connor, what's the dog's name?
Ladies and gentlemen.
What are you doing?
What do you mean?
Keep it simple.
I'm making the promo.
Just keep it simple. Just say, hey, we're the Brav Bros, two guys that talk about Bravo.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, we're the Brav Bros.
No.
Oh.
Dude, stop with the voice. Just keep it simple.
I've seen promos on TV, dude. This is how you get the fans engaged. This is how you get listeners. We're trying to get listeners here. If we just say, oh, we're two dudes that talk about Bravo, people are going to get tired of it already. We need some oomph.
All right, then fine. Let's try to do it with your voice.
Brav Bros.
Good job.
Koo.
Yeah, that was cool.
Maka. I forget what the giant's name is.
It was Mac Lear.
Mac.
Yeah.
Mac Lear. Anyway, I won't even try to do Irish accents. But anyway, that first scene where he's on the beach with his sister, like, I was like, gee, I wonder if he'll ever learn to love his weird little sister and come to terms with his lost mother and stop being so self-centered. You know, I wonder what he's going to spend the whole movie doing. But that's okay. That's okay. Like, don't just put it on mute and just watch it for the art. I don't mean to do that. Like, okay, there's some parts and there's some dialogue but towards the end that really got me choked up. But I don't know. I don't know how I feel about it. Moral of the story, though, and there's several morals of the story, as you'll come to realize discussing animated films with me. Number one, don't ever leave the kids alone with Granny for the night. Owls are evil. Mm-hmm. Chelsea, you got some?
I do, yes. I think that even if you are half turned to stone, you should still enjoy singing.
And warning the main protagonist to be careful.
Yeah. Exactly.
Yeah. One of them, another one is don't hide your feelings. Just let it go. Wait. No, don't let it go. Don't let it go. Keep it with you. Face your fears, but you got to let them go. But your problems are your own and you have to. Oh, man, I'm getting a headache. I don't know. Something about your problems and don't do drugs. And that's what I got from the old lady.
The don't do drugs part. Yeah.
I'm a huge troll. Of course, it's not that complicated, but those are just kind of the. Oh, and of course, gosh, what's the really important one? I'm blanking out on it.
Love your little sister.
Dealing with grief.
Love your little sister. That's right. I almost forgot about it. I'm just kidding. But anyway, lots of interesting things going on here. Can I also just say that if I was at the beach and I just looked up and saw like a bunch of seals up on the surface just staring at me with those beady eyes, I'd be freaked the F out. Like, the seals are so creepy in this film. All they do is stare at you.
The big ol' eyes.
At least they have smiles.
Especially since they haven't been seen in those parts for quite a long time.
And it's like so many of them. There's like 50 of them just staring at you. Haven't been seen
anyway,
in 6 years.
Bad day at the zoo, I guess. Anyway, I like this film because it's rife with these like little details. It has a lot of foreshadowing at the beginning.
Mm-hmm. There's a lot of foreshadowing, a lot of interesting parts too. Here, I have a question though. As far as going along with the creepy vibe, would you follow specks of light into what would I call the west wing of your house and put on a coat that glows?
When you put it that way, yeah.
If it turns me into a sea lion.
Yes. Let's do this. Okay, so the part where she's like following those things, I could totally see myself as a young girl doing that. Just be like, like as a kid, I was very much in my own little world and like loved all these like fantasy type things. Like, oh yes, I'm gonna go do this.
Yeah.
So I would have done it, but at the same time, like you think about it, like what are you doing?
Yeah. I don't know if I would show this to young children because I don't want them to, put on a little. Cloak and like go splashing around in the ocean at 2 a.m. but
in a storm.
Yeah,
he's like dives in.
Also, kind of discussing this film, I think this film would be a lot more engaging to me if I actually knew anything about Irish folklore.
Yeah, I think that is one of the things that is both a positive and a negative. One, on the positive side, it's very cool that we get to see these legends and folklore that may not be familiar with, right? So we're being introduced to a new culture, their legends, their way of life. Very, very exciting and cool. However, I felt that the way that it was presented didn't give you enough exclamation for the uninitiated. So I felt very confused at the very beginning of the film. It took me about 30 to 45 minutes to finally feel that I was invested in the movie. I felt that there was just a lot left unsaid, not in a good way. I felt that I felt confused and disconnected from what was happening, especially because at the beginning, you know, there's the story about the fairies and then the mom and then she dies and then the boy and the girl and then the grandma randomly comes and takes them away and there's this big journey to the city and then the city and then she plays the little shell and it brings these fairies back and then they go find them and it's just like all these steps to ultimately get to the part where oh, she is key to helping free these spirits. So, see, you know what I mean? And I it felt very convoluted at the very beginning to find, just to get to the point of the movie. For me.
I didn't get that. For me. I guess, like, I was watching it kind of thinking maybe it would, but as I was going through, I could kind of feel it. It kind of has this way about it. It's like when you're reading a story as a kid, you just accept it. And so it's like, okay, so this is happening. And I could kind of see, like, especially when the grandma came, like, I was totally expecting her to be, I couldn't quite determine whether or not she was the mother of the dad or the mother of the mom. And if it was the mother of the mom, I'm thinking, no, she's the sea witch, because everybody, he keeps calling her the witch, you know?
Yeah.
And so I wasn't quite sure, like, is she, who
Cranky?
Is she?
Cranky? Yes.
Yes.
A little Meet the Robinsons there.
So I felt like there were a lot of these moments, and I did feel like I kind of just went with it.
Mm-hmm.
And if you go into it expecting a lot of explanation, you're not going to get it, and so that's going to be frustrating. So in those situations, I just don't expect it.
It felt very much like a Studio Ghibli film in that it wasn't they go at their own pace and they don't care. And there's not explanation. You just are kind of thrown into the world. And so
I actually thought this was Studio Ghibli, like, going into it without looking into it. Like, when we were first talking about it, I thought it was a Studio Ghibli film, just because I hadn't really looked into it.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's why, another reason.
Like, I'm fine with, like, an Odyssey style kind of, like, you know, traveling story where we meet strange creature after strange creature after strange creature, and by the end my interactions with them have changed me for the better, and I'm the hero. It's just that, like, I got confused as to whether I should, like, emotionally care about these characters or not. Like, they all looked really cool, like old naked man in his beard dude. I'm assuming he's wearing something underneath, but we don't know. Have to look into the folklore. He was really cool, but it's like, like, what do you do?
Yeah,
like,
didn't...
who are you? Like, how do I, like, how do you relate to the character and the character to you? Like, how important are you? Apparently, all these eccentric fairy type characters and fairy folk will die out if this one Selkie dies, or, like, I don't know. I guess I just don't know. I guess I just don't know the lore, I suppose.
Yeah.
I do like bad characters who change for the better, like the El Witch.
Mm-hmm. Someone mentioned this in the comments, but she reminded me from Spirited Away.
Yubaba.
Yes.
Dude, she would give her a run for her money, man.
Very much similar vibes.
I love the El Witch. She's like a walking metaphor for drugs. Just take this and they'll all go away. Yeah. But I have a major problem with that sequence. But before we do that, what were your, like, favorite or most, like, beautiful sequences in the film? Like, which were the ones that were, like, the most enjoyable to watch or coolest to watch?
The beginning part was cool because it just opened it up and it really set the stage for how the whole movie was going to be. And I didn't know if it was going to continue that way, because I have seen other movies where they'll start out, like, really kind of in that watercolory vibe and just with lots of things going around on the edges, but then they won't stay that way. But this one, it just continued to do that the entire thing, which I felt was really good, keeping your attention, even though the story and the pacing wasn't as consistent as you maybe wanted it to be. It helped with keeping your attention on what was going on.
I liked pretty much any time that we went to more mystical elements. So I liked when she first put on the robe and then she was swimming in the water with the seals. I thought that was a very cool segment. Later, at the very end, when she is singing the Song of the Sea, spoiler alert, and all the fairies and everything is coming together. Those are kind of the moments that stand out to me.
I love how haunting that song is. She, like, gets up on the rock and she's like, song of the sea. Gonna find my mama with my brother and me. Wait, wrong song. Sorry.
Oh, man. There was one scene where when he was on his own little kayak, not a kayak, but it was kind of like a flatboard boat, and it's floating right before he goes to meet the bearded man in his little place, wherever mm-hmm. he was. I liked that sequence just because you came up, you were looking down at him, and he's just laying on his, he just decides to lay down, but you see all of the swirliness all around him as he's floating down the river, and the all of the magic is pushing him down. I liked it.
Yeah, I really think I enjoy. Yeah, I think I'm with Morgan. I really liked the first sequence with the girl sneaking out and, you know, being a Selkie, and then I really like the ending part and the part with the where they see the mom at the end. Spoiler alert. Is both sad but also pretty happy. Everything else is just kind of this kind of weird journey and stuff. It's very cool to look at. I like when the mom's like explaining everything at the beginning and telling this story to Ben, and everything's kind of like, you know, so these like motion graphics that like Cartoon Saloon does, and mm-hmm. it's all pretty beautiful.
Did you get? So they do go and visit quite a few places in this, and it kind of gave me a vibe, kind of like Wander Over Yonder, where there's, was that the movie? No. Over the Garden Wall. Excuse me.
Yeah.
It reminded me of
Over the Garden Wall.
Over the Garden Wall, where you're just kind of like going from location to location, and there's new craziness that happens, except for this, instead of being in little,
And it's
Lake was probably the similar when you add them all together, but it seemed like every 10 to 15 minutes we were at a new location with something. Either someone was giving us information, or we were doing something to, you know, help find the sister, to get the cape, to whatever. But there were quite a few little stops along the way, checkpoints, if you will, mm-hmm. which reminded me of that.
Yeah.
I got a lot of Over the Garden Wall with this.
Yeah, it's kind of got that kind of journey thing, and yeah, I don't know.
Here's a question I had. It was made clear that the mother died, but it wasn't made clear.
Yeah, until the end. I mean, you assumed as the viewer that she had died, because it's not discussed again. The characters are not attuned to what happened. So it's not until the very end we realize she didn't actually die. So
yeah. So when she
I have a big long
take...
list of questions which we can discuss at the end of things that
and
don't make sense to me.
We will try to answer them for you.
Okay.
Did you ever think that maybe this goes along with the questions you're going to ask? But if the mom wanted to take Saoirse away but gave her a choice at the end, does that mean that she was going to kill Saoirse and like drag her into the afterlife? Because that's basically where she was.
That wasn't
my
question.
She was in Selkie Heaven. Well, that's one that I have. I guess I'm not Irish enough. Well, we've had one, yes, but what about second breakfast? Sorry, I'm speaking Hobbit, not Irish, obviously. Anyway, here's one of the big... Obviously, looking at Ben. Okay, and then I have another thing. Like, who was the giant? Is the giant the dad? Is the giant Ben? Is Ben like the giant? Who is the Elwitch?
Yeah,
the Elwitch literally the grandma, or is it more like a symbol? Or is she... Or when I saw that when they walk in and it's the same music that was playing as the grandma's house and how similar she is to the grandma, I was like, I got it. This whole thing is just a pipe dream. Like, these kids, like... stumbled into a can of catnip or something, or took some weird stuff, you know, Europe, and this is just a big trip, and this is like a dream, and he's gonna wake up and he's gonna wake up on that rock by the ocean and be good and be okay again, but it wasn't, so like, I don't know.
Yeah, and now that I'm realizing it, okay, so the big stone giant.
Great stone dragon.
Oh man, we are
go
all
out there and
into...
fetch the Selkie. The fate of the fairy folk rests in your paws. Did I mention I was the great stone giant?
So the great stone giant, he's basically the dad, and it's a a mirrored image of what happened with the dad and his mom, because the dad is totally depressed and is still depressed for ever since the mom died, and so he's just kind of a dead inside almost.
His heart has turned to stone. A frozen heart, perhaps?
Ooh,
a stony heart.
Perhaps.
The trolls are like, we can help you with that. Why didn't the fairy folk just bring in the trolls?
That's true.
Because then
they
would have
made
island.
It way too complicated.
And so, yeah, I now that I'm seeing that, the whole thing was a mirrored image of what had happened to the mom. But it just really is kind of messes with the mind. Because was she giving stories of the past or telling stories of the future?
Oh, it's all an eternal circle. One of those circle of life kind of things.
Rachel in the comments says the giant is the owl witch's son, and then Dian says...
Yeah, that's right. They established that.
Yeah, Dian says it's symbolic, two storylines running side by side, real world and fairy tale, and the kids are able to cross the curtain.
Yeah, yeah.
Rachel also says the owl witch has been bottling people's feelings to protect them like her son.
Well, that's what I'm getting with. Don't steal my thunder, Rachel. I'm getting to this. But but yeah, that's exactly what I wanted to get into, which was one of the main messages from the film. I'm going to make almost a direct quote from the film. If someone could take all your pain away, would you let them? If you could change your pain, would you? But anyway, what makes me so angry is that Ben is still a jerk. And he says, no, it just makes things worse. And I'm like,
it does.
What? How does he know that now? How the crap did Ben come to that conclusion when he was such a jerk this whole film? Like, when did he have this huge catharsis? Like, it didn't make zero sense to me. Like, he needed to fall to that. Like, something horrible needed to happen before he finally realized it. But no, he was like, no, it just makes things worse. I figured things out. And then he walks over to Saoirse and is like, hey, I'm sorry, I was a jerk. And she's like, that's cool. You know, and then, but like, I don't know. I think that was way too rush.
He's been seeing people turn to stone in front of his eyes. He's seen all of these emotions bottled up. And so why would this be a good thing to see someone turn to stone?
Because I don't know. Because
he also has family who's died, and he's like, that's the whole point at the very beginning, is he's so hardened about the mom passing, who
and
was his friend.
He's got this like blaming complex. Yes. Problem with, yeah. Saoirse.
Yes,
obviously he blames her for what happened.
Mm-hmm. Oh, 100%.
Mm-hmm.
No doubt in my mind. That's a dead giveaway.
So
but
what,
yeah,
for what's your take on it? If you could take all your pain away, would you let them?
It's so hard because like, this is like this. That's a very interesting message about our society. Like, think of so many ways that can distract you, or take you off on a tangent, or take you off on another path, or completely mask. I think it was Sammy Hagar, my man from Van Halen, who wrote this song about one of the lines is like, "They'll find a cure for anything, just kill the pain and numb my brain," and But he talks about that versus truth, which is, I have this problem. This happened to me. I can't deny it. I can't run away from it. I have to, like, I can't put it away and pretend it didn't happen, because look how it turns your heart. And so that's a very, very hard truth. And I think a lot of us just don't get it, or we struggle with it. You know, mm-hmm. I think all of us listening have had like huge tragedies in our lives that we've had to deal with, and it just doesn't do any good to bottle it up. And it's also going into this kind of parental protective thing where it's like, should parents allow their children to go through horrible pain? Or should they try to protect them by maybe taking a shortcut or resorting to some drastic measure?
Have you ever experienced turbulence on a flight and wondered why?
And you can see all the terrain around you. You've got no issue with visibility or anything?
No, everything's peachy.
Maybe you've sat on the tarmac for hours wondering why your plane isn't moving.
Well, we're outside here. They're saying the ramp is closed. They won't let us park because of Air Force One.
Listen in on the conversations between pilots and air traffic controllers on the Air Traffic Out of Control podcast.
510 is declaring an emergency. There's smoke in the cabin. I need to make a landing right now on 31 left.
We have the most interesting, wild, and funny ATC recordings you will ever hear. Check out Air Traffic Out of Control wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts.
And I'm not trying to make any kind of statement on things like depression and medication and stuff like that. It's just this, in the broad sense, it's an interesting question to ask ourselves. If someone could take all of our pain, all of our sorrow away, would you let them? You know? And there's many levels of that. There's like spiritual, there's like some, you know, there's like the redemption factor. But does that even erase the memory, you know, and you get into forgiving and forgetting kind of things? Is it good to forget your pain, or is it good to have it with you to learn from it? Like, it's very strange. I like wise old Rafiki, who says, what is it? The past can hurt, but you can, the way I see it, you can either run from it or learn from it. Mm-hmm. And then he tries to whack Simba and he's like, haha, you see?
You learned.
First of all, I'm going to take your stick. Not the stick! Where are you going?
Your Matthew Broderick is
it's so good.
Say the great kings of the past look down at us from those stars.
Oh man. But yeah, it is a challenging conversation, and I do think there is a differentiation between just masking that pain, which is not getting rid of the pain altogether. The pain is there. And whether you're doing that through whatever sort of substance or item that you want to mask your pain.
Addictions.
Yeah. And then there's a whole other level of, which I think is letting the pain go while still remembering the memory and learning from it, but not having to live with the pain. Because I don't think that's what this world is about, that we're, all this stuff happens to us and we just have to live with the pain and deal with it. I really think that the pain can go away. We can learn from those experiences and we can be at peace. But we just have to go about it the right way. We can't self-medicate to think that that's a solution. It's really confronting those fears or those situations in our life that are causing us trauma and pain and whatnot. And with Ben, it was really letting go of his mother. He had so much grief and he wasn't able to forgive anybody. And I think at the very, very end, he is able to do that by seeing her. Now, not all of us have this opportunity to see dead ones and actually talk to them and get the situation, but in that situation, it worked for him.
Aw, service.
No, it's true though. Like, he served his sister and decided to be what he needed to be.
Number one rule on the mission. President, I don't like my companion. Have you served them? Gotta go do that.
Yeah. Well, I just, and when I think about pain and these different things, especially when it's happened in my life, I kind of look at it like, it's like when you break a bone, or the mental image I have is like when you've broken your bone and you can either just ignore it and let it hang there and kind of go around it and just use your other arm, or you just like kind of try to overcompensate in other ways, or you can go to a doctor, you can have it examined and take the necessary steps in order to fix it. And so in that way, it may take time. In fact, it almost always takes time to get over and to work through and to be able to cope with these things. It takes time to heal.
Yeah.
And that's okay. And that's one of the things that I've learned in my life. For sure.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not to be mad at yourself or, you know, because it doesn't happen overnight. Like, shouldn't I be better? Shouldn't I like just.
And it's also about overcoming your fear of remembering and your fear of the problem. Because if you notice, Ben is deathly afraid of water throughout the film. Uh-huh. It's not just that he doesn't want to get wet. He gets panicky and then he just gets pushed in by Saoirse so that he can do the, at one point he has to go into a well or something and talk to, or whatever. But anyway, it's just
water
very,
equals death to him.
Yeah, it's just, water does equal death to him.
See, that's what I like about this film is that the themes that we're able to discuss, you know, and I think that's why a lot of people, this does resonate with a lot of people, is that not only the visuals, which we've talked to about at length, but also the themes and the messages that it's able to convey.
Yeah, and there's like micro stuff in there too, like tiny little details, like the seashell from which the Song of the Sea emits or bursts forth, you know? There's the spiral motif, the lighthouse stairs, they resemble the shell's spiral. Of course, you can notice the giant very early on in the film before they even mention him. I was like, that's kind of weird. And then there's also this part where, like, there's this, like, crazy foreshadowing where it's Saoirse puts on the coat, the cloak, and does something, and basically, like, all of the cast at once feel her presence or feel that something's about to happen. They cut to everyone, all these mysterious characters, and I'm like, whoa, 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 who are all these people? anyway, and then also, I got this, but when Saoirse, she's like going up the stairs or down the stairs in the lighthouse, and her shadow is the profile of the seals instead of just her. So there's all kinds of really cool details, and I bet the writers or the layout people or the artists just had a great time like putting in all these little hints and all these clues and how intricate it is. It does remind me of Over the Garden Wall, where after you finish Over the Garden Wall, it goes back and explains why this person looks like this, why this person says this, why this person dresses like this, what this character's relationship is to this other character in this other episode, and it all kind of comes together. And I think stuff like that is really, really cool.
Yeah. I also really liked the editing of this film. I felt like it cut to the right things at the right time to kind of put those images in your mind, and so that you remember, oh, yeah, the mountain dude is waiting for something. Oh, the mountain dude is there. And all of these silent figures are waiting for something else to happen to bring them alive. So I thought that was cool. I also really appreciated the music. I think that was one of the other reasons why this movie appealed to me. I really like Irish music and the Irish song. My mom came in and was watching it with me, and some of her quotes was that it was a kaleidoscope of color.
Kaleidoscope of color. Exactly.
I was like, you're right, Mom. And then she also noted that she was like, you know, it's interesting. The Irish, it doesn't have a very long range. And anybody who does music, you can just say, like, they basically stay within one octave for most of their songs. And they just kind of stick within a couple different notes.
Try singing our national anthem and see how many octaves you fly through.
Right. And she was like, it's probably just because they had most of their songs or most of their music came from like a pipe or in this case a seashell, so it just kind of stays within this realm, but they do it in an interesting way, so I appreciated that a lot.
Yeah I love the end credits. I love any type of, they do this a lot in short films during the credits, but I love credits where they show like production stuff, like storyboards, like rough passes, you know, tests, concept art, that kind of stuff is really cool to see, man. There is so much work that goes behind these films. Like, I'm working on something over the summer that lasts 20 seconds long, and it's killing us with the production schedule and how hard we're working. And so I can't even imagine. Like, obviously they have a staff of 400 instead of a staff of 4 like we do, but man, just the work that goes into it, it totally pays off for them. Like, I can't imagine how they must have felt sitting down at the premiere or with the final you know, the final version and watching it, you know, with all their coworkers and fellow artists. It's probably breathtaking.
So, okay, I'm going to go into Morgan's question time, which
Morgan's question time. We should have our own jingle for that.
Maybe.
Yeah, we need a jingle.
Okay. Let's get on that. Question number
Morgan
one.
Morgan has questions.
Okay,
Morgan
so these questions. Are questions that I just was left with after the fact that I don't think were very clear to me. And maybe they're like totally obvious. And if you're in the chat and you're listening to this right now, let me know if this was something that was discussed and somehow missed it. So question number one. So we know that Saoirse is part Selkie and part human. Now, why wasn't the son part Selkie? I mean, obviously he has the
like
same...
That's like the most obvious question. Like, I didn't even think of that.
Human child?
Well, because she's his mom. He has the same... Both of them have the same parents. Why? I mean, is this just like... what movie is it where like only certain traits are passed on to like magical traits? Oh, it's like Harry Potter where some kids end up having it, some don't.
They're Selkie muggles.
Yes, exactly. So I don't know.
He's like, Mum's a Selkie.
That's a muggle. Someone said old. Here's the answer. Okay, so this goes to my ignorance of the folklore. Only females get to be selfies.
That's what
selfies.
I was thinking.
All get to be selfies. Awesome, Dion. That's
I'll
okay.
Take a selfie.
Someone else says it's like the Anna Elsa thing where I don't think all the kids get magic. Well, what is
that's
it?
That's another thing.
I think I honestly think it's just the female gene.
In my opinion, in order to understand the son, you must understand the father, and I know next to nothing about him from this film. Like, did the dad know that his wife was a Selkie?
There are male Selkies, because if you look up Selkie on Wikipedia, it says male Selkies are...
They're called Melkies. Just kidding.
Male Selkies are described as being very handsome in their human form and having great seductive powers over women. Yeah.
Hello.
So it can be both.
It's all about body language.
So anyways, that was just a question. Obviously not important to the story. I agree. It was one of those things where, you know, just because one parent has it doesn't mean you're automatically that. But, I mean, he should be, right? Because she wasn't human, so... He has to be half.
But the dad.
Even though his skills aren't manifesting, or his powers, he doesn't have powers, but he still is half Selkie, right? Even though
I'm going to go
with
the
muggle theory.
She is
not a human. So literally a human and a Selkie had a baby. So you can't say that he's 100% human because, you know what I mean? Like, he's half Selkie, half human, right? Because she wasn't human.
Here's the deal. But just who was the dad? What was his motivation? One, I can spot Brendan Gleeson's voice a mile away now. After all those Harry Potter films and after Secret of Kells and all that. Was he in Secret of Kells? Yeah, he was in Secret of Kells. He was the father. He was the abbot. Yeah, that's right. Abbot Kell. But anyway, just like, did he know what he was getting into when he married her?
That was my other question is, why was the mom with the dad in the first place? And did he know? I don't think he did know, because it becomes very clear throughout the end that either he knew and he was suppressing it, or he just had no idea.
I think he did, because when it goes to the flashback of her going into the ocean, she's like, I'm sorry, I have to save our child. And
he doesn't have to know what that means. He looks really confused.
Yes.
So, I feel like he did, though. I feel like he was like, no, don't, you know?
Yeah.
So, okay, but why was the mom with the dad? So she was with him for a long time. And she just finally realized, I have to leave to save the child. And by saving the child, I disappear. I felt like that wasn't very clear. Like, what truly happened to the mom? Like, was she planning on staying with the family the whole time? But because of... she had to leave to save the daughter, that she couldn't come back. And why was she with the dad? Once. Like, how did they meet? I know this is, like, not something that they're going to go into in the movie. That's just way too context. But why was she there? How did they get there? Why did she say,
I'm going to go
like Little Mermaid style and meet a human and have children and... whatnot. I don't know.
Yeah, maybe, I don't know, maybe she was, like, in love with him, even though she only had a statue of him, and she went to the sea witch, who, like, wanted her voice, and, like, all this stuff. keep singing!
I have another question.
Okay.
Why was Saoirse? I can't say this name!
Saoirse.
Saoirse. Why was Saoirse the only one who had to sing the Song of the Sea to free the fairies? Were there no other Selkies around? Like, literally, she was the last Selkie, like the last unicorn. Couldn't there be anyone else to sing the song? Why did it have to be her?
We need Schmedrick.
So, Pirate Cat.
I don't know. Maybe these are really obvious questions to everyone, but they weren't so to me.
Yeah, I feel like. But Rachel, I don't think they really. I feel like Rachel's been trying to help us in the chat. She's like, oh, they're part human, part mermaid.
But yeah. Anyway, so,
we just don't know. We are uninitiated. We are not in the League of Shadows.
I can't wait till our next movie and we have unanswered question theme music that has to happen. And
unanswered questions. Is there a song called Unanswered Questions? I bet there is.
I feel like there is.
Real easily.
All right. So closing this up, what did they do right with this film? What did they do wrong with this film? Not necessarily wrong, but what worked, what didn't?
Can I just stop you? I'm going to let you finish. But I just want to say I know what my favorite part of the movie is.
My
favorite part of the movie is when the grandma's looking for Saoirse and she opens the bathroom door and she's freaking out. It's just a shot of Saoirse in the shower with her coat. She's like, what?
It's like, with so like the water going like, over.
I love it. I took a screen cap of that because I watched it at work last night, but I got to go to work to get it. But it's like the funniest freaking frame ever. But anyway, what they did right is that going along those lines, what they did right is that they made it really cute. It is hard not to like Saoirse. She is the cute mm-hmm. as a button. She's just a little marshmallow just running around. Then she ages unnaturally and then she's dying. And then, oh, it's so sad. I was like, please don't do Grave of the Butterflies. Please don't do Grave of the Fireflies again. Don't make me go through that again. But anyway, yeah, that's pretty much it. That's what. No. They got a bunch of stuff to like. They got the art. They got a good mixture of danger and humor. If you're the kind of person who really likes these like very eccentric characters that they run into, and all this stuff, I think that's what they definitely did right. Like very high quality animation and art.
Mm-hmm.
So I feel like the music was fun, or fun. I mean, it's well implemented. I liked it. The kaleidoscope of colors. I thought that the art and the artistry images were just totally right on point and really made it whimsical. I liked that. Yeah, that's what I liked, what they did right. Things that I felt like they could have improved upon were... It was a little slow at places, and it was a lot of conundrums that came to be. But I
hate those conundrums.
I felt like it left you thinking, at least, and so I didn't. There wasn't a lot that I could find wrong with this.
We had a lot of people who were very, very excited. We had so many voicemails submitted to us, so I'm not going to be able to play them all.
Holy cow.
Yeah, so this is a very popular one. So we will go straight down the line. Our first one is from Chloe, and so let's take it away, Chloe.
Hi, Rotoscopers. This is Chloe, and I'm so excited that you guys are reviewing Song of the Sea. This is one of my absolute favorite animated films, and I don't feel like enough people have heard about it, so I'm hoping your podcast will help it reach out to more people, because I love it so much, and I think it deserves as much attention as it can get. I remember when I first saw it, I was just blown away by it and how gorgeous everything was. I think that every single frame is just so beautiful and has so much detail in it. And I love the characters. I think they're really sweet and lovable, and the designs are great. And I think the story's really great, too. It's just original and touching, and I love that the Irish folklore is intertwined into everything. I think it's so cool. This is definitely a 5-star movie for me, and I hope you guys enjoy it, too. And I also hope that you get a chance to watch The Secret of Kells, because it's also an amazing movie by Tom Moore, and it's on Netflix, so it's really easy to watch. So I hope that you guys enjoy it, and I love your podcast. Thanks. Bye.
Aw, Chloe, we love you. And that's interesting. Wow, 5 out of 5 stars, huh?
Mm-hmm.
We have a winner. Yeah, I have seen Secret of Kells, and I'm just going to say right now, I liked Secret of Kells more than I liked this film. It was close, but I enjoyed Secret of Kells more. From a movie-watching experience, I enjoyed Secret of Kells more. I just think it was a little better put together than, like, story-wise. But that's not to say that I think this this show, this film is garbage and the other one is the best movie ever. Like, not at all. I just think that if I had to compare the two, I enjoyed Secret of Kells better.
Okay, next one is from Jack. Take it away, Jack.
Hey, Roastcopers. This is Jack calling in. I just want to give my thoughts about the Song of the Sea.
Okay.
When I first saw this movie, I found it really hard to watch. I think it's because it has this very somber and depressing tone to it that made it really difficult for me to get through. I was going to write this movie off at first, but when it kept on moving, I kept on getting more into the mythology of it. I'm not familiar with Celtic mythology, so I guess that's why I find it very fascinating and new to me. But towards the end, it really won me over. When the appearance of the mom at the very climax of the movie happened, this movie absolutely floored me. I forgave it for all its flaws. I forgave it for all it was putting me through. At the end of this very depressing road, it had a point to it, and I found it very moving in the end. After all that, I really have high respect for this. I may not watch this movie again, but I highly respect it. So if I was to give this a rating, I'd probably give it 4.5 stars out of 5. It's really unique. The animation's beautiful, and I look forward to see what the studio will bring up next. So guys, keep up the great work, and I look forward to your next episode. Bye.
Thanks, Jack.
Thank you, Jack.
I like how he said that. It does increase as you go through the movie. You go from being maybe like into it, then to like really enjoying it.
This is very Finding Nemo because it's like it has good moments, then it has like very desperately horrible moments. And it's not quite that maybe that was a bad comparison because it's not like a huge roller coaster like Finding Nemo was, but it's more like a slow burn. Like it's like Saoirse is dying, kid, and once that starts to happen, then he starts caring, and then it all kind of comes together in the end. But yeah, that was very depressing for me. Was watching this child pretty much die in front of me. Yeah, pretty depressing for most people, I'd say. And but anyway. The takeaway is the ending, which is this beautiful reunion and this glimpse into the beyond and the hope, you know, and
messages come together.
Yeah, all that stuff. And a lot of people in the chat are comparing this to Secret of Nim, and I think that is a pretty good reference or comparison, I suppose.
Also Frozen with the white hair / slowly dying.
That's right. White hair / slowly dying.
That is what it means.
All right. Our next one is from Kurt. So take it away, Kurt.
Hey, this is Kurt from the Oregon Trail again. I just wanted to call in because you guys are reviewing Song of the Sea, and I saw this movie, I think it was over a year ago, and it was really, really good. I also saw Secret of the Kells way back when. And the first thing I think about when I watch these two animated movies is that they're like Cartoon Network shows on steroids.
That's what I said.
Everything's flat, 2D. It kind of looks like a wonderful stained glass window, that type of thing. I think the music was fantastic in Song of the Sea. For some reason, the mom and the daughter seal people, they had the most comforting singing voices. Even if not necessarily I could understand everything, I still felt something from it, and I kind of think that's why music's so amazing. I want to talk about like the culture shock a little bit. It was sort of like Spirited Away because there's all these myths and legends we're not used to, and I'm just excited that the people on that side of the world that know these myths and legends are getting them in an animated feature. And I just wanted to ask you, Rotoscopas, a question. What Cartoon Network show would you put on steroids? Or more like, which one would you make like a full-fledged, awesome Secret of the Kells super detailed 2D animated film?
Keep going,
guys. You're awesome. Thanks. Bye.
Oh, man. You're awesome, man. Come on.
Thanks, Kurt.
Okay, so Kurt has a great question. If you could take a Cartoon Network series and make a full-fledged movie out of it, in other words, inject some animation steroids into it, make it this awesome animated full-length movie, which would it be? I already have my answer.
This is a hard question for me because I don't have Cartoon Network, and so I'm gonna bow out. I wouldn't be able to give a good answer.
I agree as well, because I didn't grow up with cable, so I didn't watch a lot of Cartoon Network shows, and I don't watch the current one. So, Mason, take this one away.
Yes.
Johnny Bravo. Hoo-ha! Hey, little mama. How about you pollinate with a real bug? But anyway, let's see. Yeah, you know what I would do? You know how everyone loves, like, mashups, you know, and stuff like that?
People love the mashups.
Everything has to be connected, and all this garbage. But let's just do that with Cartoon Network and make a basically Super Smash Brothers, but a movie, but for Cartoon Network. So have everyone from the Cartoon Network, like, you know, Cartoon Cartoons, Hanna-Barbera, everything that they own, just kind of come together and battle evil. We could have Ed, Edd, and Eddy joining up with Scooby-Doo and Courage the Cowardly Dog. And then we could have the old school guys like I Am Weasel and Cow and Chicken show up. You know, we could have the Flintstones, you know. Maybe the old Hanna-Barbera cartoons are jealous of the new cartoons and are waging war with them. So it could be like Cartoon Network Civil War, you know. And then Adventure Time, and then, of course, because he, you know, stupid. But I'm just kidding. Not really. But anyway, I think that something like that would work out. Or Samurai Jack movie. I asked Jendy Tartakovsky about a Samurai Jack movie, and he didn't deny that it was happening.
Ooh.
So.
Drop the mic.
Yeah, don't go to your blog with that one. I don't. Well, no, it was on our interview that's on the YouTube, so you can quote it.
All right. Next up, Rachel, who I know has lots of opinions about this.
Hi, Rotoscopers. So I'm really excited that you are reviewing Song of the Sea. Song of the Sea is a special movie for me in my life because when I saw it, it wasn't that long after my cousin had died and she left two little boys. And so when I saw it and seeing Ben's struggle and his dealing with his grief, it really meant a lot to me. And I remember I sat in the theater and I literally like sobbed for a couple of minutes after the movie had ended. And it's one though that has become richer for me and deeper for me each time I've seen it. I love the artistry is beautiful. I love the music in it. I think the whole lore and the Celtic lore and the mythology that they create is really, really beautiful. To me, it's like a new sort of Secret of Nim, and it's one that I just appreciate more and more each time I see it, and I really love it. So I hope you guys do too. And just curious, have you ever had a movie that really connected with you in that kind of personal way and that felt like it was sharing a personal experience that you had, like I did with my cousin in this movie? So anyway, curious for your thoughts. Thanks.
All right. So she wants to know, is there a movie that we've all connected with at some point in time where it was basically living your life? It's an interesting one. Yeah, there's been different movies, not necessarily animated, but there's been a lot of movies that have had different moments that really hit you hard.
Can I open up my soul for a little bit here?
Just this once.
The year was 1998. The movie was Winnie the Pooh, The Search for Christopher Robin. Y'all probably heard this before, but that movie got me so freaked out as a kid. If you know the premise, basically, Pooh and the gang can't find Christopher Robin. They're concerned of where he is. They ask Owl, biggest mistake ever. Owl erroneously tells them, after reading a note that Christopher Robin left behind, that Christopher Robin has gone to a place called Skull and not School. And because of that, Pooh and the gang, not Owl, he stays there. They go off on this horrible, like, trial of a journey. And they are all, like, tested to the absolute limit, and they almost die several times just trying to find Christopher Robin. And all they needed to know was to wait for him to come back from school for the day. And it's so maddening, like, how the premise of this film. And there's some really, like, for, like, a 10-year-old kid, like, I was pretty traumatized because at one point, like, Pooh, like, falls into a bottomless pit and there's no way out. And it's like he like wonders if he'll ever see Christopher Robin again. And it's like, does Pooh die? Does he starve to death? Is there some respite there? But no, he has to stay in the bottom of this cavern for the rest of eternity, not being loved again. And like stuff like that just like just crushed my soul. And I was like weeping in front of my family while we were watching this at home. And anyway, I was an emotional little kid. I still am now. But man, I can't go back and watch The Search for Christopher Robin. Maybe I need to face my fears and watch it someday, but That's funny. You guys will all see me cry like a baby.
Well,
now that I'm thinking about it, Toy Story 2, definitely. Mm. It hits, like, when I go back and rewatching, not necessarily, I mean, yes, I did cry the very first time I, you know, Jesse's song comes up. Everybody did. But even today, I'll go back and, like, there's different parts of the movie that I'll still get totally weepy-eyed over. And like the whole Toy Story like trilogy it came out when we were kids, and then it came out like every right one followed our generation.
Yeah, every milestone was basically the time of life that we were in, you know.
Right.
Like around Toy Story 2 was right around when we were like tweens and mm-hmm. kind of moving up, and so like I think I've said this before on a previous podcast, but definitely felt like a bit of guilt of growing up and I'm watching mm-hmm. this movie with my dad next to me, and like I'm not a little kid anymore, but like I still like kids stuff, but I'm not, because I'm not quite like old anyway. Yeah, that's for another day. Okay, so we have two more. Next one is from good old Ryan P. Who doesn't love Ryan? So here we go.
Hello, Rotoscopers. Ryan Pareto here with his review for Song of the Sea with a quick congratulations, Mason. Congratulations, bro. Doing us what? Proud.
What? Oh,
Chelsea,
yeah. Okay.
Have fun in Brazil, and above all, be safe. And Morgan, our dear Morgan, congrats on the baby. That's
dear
awesome.
Dear Morgan.
And now to the review, which I'm very interested to see how you guys will take this, because I don't necessarily think it was an enjoyable animated film. I think it would serve better as a book of sorts, but I think the subject matter was so important to talk about. You know, this family dealing with the loss of a parent, which, albeit magical circumstances, it's so important to talk about that, because spoilers, if you ever lose a parent, it sucks a lot. But, you know, we're tied to them through that love and ceremony and tradition they impart on us while they're with us. And I think that was a really cool thing that they went over. And I don't necessarily know if I enjoyed the film, but I'm giving it 4 out of 5 stars. And, you know, thank you guys. Have a good one.
Wait, Ryan. All that and you still gave it 4 out of 5 stars?
Yep.
You're a kinder man than I. But, yeah, it's, you know, yeah, I mean, I've lost a parent, and I didn't really feel it that strongly with this, because I don't think the film was about finding the parent. It was a little bit about that at the end, but it was more like keeping what he had left safe. Which is a big part of losing a family member, is returning to the rest of the family and strengthening that bond. But I felt that more so with other films than this one. You know, one of my personal beliefs is that our family members who die, they don't really go away forever. We'll meet them again someday. And the part at the end with the, you know, with the climax and seeing the mom again and everyone being together again, for as brief a moment as it was, that was really, really touching with me. And I mean, I even have a friend that I'm working with in at A&M who he's not very emotional, but he told me that he like flat out was weeping during that part. I didn't quite get to that level, but it's interesting how powerful that sequence is. And it's definitely says a lot about the production team for this film, like really tacking down those emotions.
All right, last one for today is Tanya. So take it away,
lots of newbies,
Tanya.
Today.
Yes.
I know.
Fresh meat.
Hi, Rotoscopers. This is Tanya from Melbourne, Australia, giving my quick thoughts on Song of the Sea.
Crikey, mate.
I'd like to begin by saying that the presentation of this film is absolutely beautiful. I really liked how it was set in the Irish coastline as opposed to something as grand and majestic as, oh, a castle in a faraway place, or a city bustling with people. It really emphasizes the isolation that is normally felt in small Irish towns, which allows the audience to just sit down, relax, and just take in the scenery, which is something I appreciate a lot in this film, especially how it's directed more to kids. It really teaches them about the appreciation of nature and patience. Also, the animation, I really like the approach that they did. They really took advantage of the 2D medium and tried to use it to create a storybook film feel to the story they are expressing, how everything is just flat and 2D, especially the backgrounds. The backgrounds just, if you take that out of the film, that is an artwork in itself. It is absolutely gorgeous to look at. I think that's about it. Also, Morgan, congratulations on your little bundle of joy. We got another addition to the Rotoscopers family. I can't wait to hear from him next. Good luck to you guys. Bye.
Aw.
That was fun. Thanks. So glad to have you guys.
Yeah, Morgan's child is going to grow up just thinking that the Rotoscopers podcast is normal and that it's like everyone does this.
Everybody's
parents every other
say.
Tuesday.
That's awesome. Last thoughts for this one for me. I'm gonna rate this. Oh, I'm gonna go 3.5 stars. My overall enjoyment of this was actually really high. It didn't inspire me to want to watch it multiple times though. But I really did like it, and there wasn't a lot that I can take away from it. Only it just resonated at that 3.5 level for me. So that's where I'm going to take it.
What about you, Mason?
I really enjoyed the film. 3.5 stars. I mean, it wasn't my favorite. It wasn't terrible. I mean, it was good. It was really well done. And but again, I like Secret of Kells more than that, but it's not because of the artwork or anything. It's just overall I enjoyed it a little more, but this is a powerhouse of European animation. It is like something really cool to see, something along the lines of like Ernest and Celestine or something like that. And I hope that this film will encourage other like art houses to make animated films like that aren't afraid to go into like lesser known mythologies and legends and stuff like that, because it's cool. It makes for cool material. And so I think this is another one of those pioneering forays into independent or more independent than not animation from across the pond. And I really enjoyed it.
I'm going to give it 3.5 as well. We are all on the same page. a lot of the people in the voicemails gave it higher rating, but for me, I feel the beginning really makes it less enjoyable. I felt if I were rewatching it, I felt I would obviously know what was going on and be able to appreciate it more. But I felt very disconnected to the movie for the first 30 minutes and slightly bored, to be honest. However, once it really does start picking up and Ben really kind of gets a purpose in what he needs to do to save the sister, I think it does pick up. And then the ending is very spectacular. And as has been said multiple times, you really can't just ignore the visuals, how beautiful it is, the animation. It's so unique. It's so exciting. I really do like getting to see a unique aesthetic presented, especially in the 2D form. So for those reasons, I'm going to give it 3.5.
This is awesome. It was a great movie, and I was really glad that I watched it, honestly. So if you guys have any questions, or if you want to tell us what you think, you can go to rotoscopers.com/125 and be sure to comment and leave your reviews there, thoughts and opinions. We always love to be able to comment back and keep the conversation going. And also, if you're going to be tweeting about this episode, make sure to check out, use the hashtag AnimAddicts or AnimAddicts125. We also have voicemails. Like, we had so many voicemails. Thank you so much for sending out so many voicemails.
Yeah,
that were,
it's so fun to hear from y'all.
Yeah, and there was just a lot of really poignant ones too. And so I love being able to get to know more of the community that is joining us here.
And
so
also,
it really, It makes you feel like you're a part of it too.
Big shout out to everyone who joined us live. Both the chat on the website, rotoscopers.com/live, and the chat on the actual YouTube page were hopping. There were all sorts of people in there, lots of conversation. We did our best to answer your questions, but sometimes there's just so much conversation that you guys are having between each other that it just zooms away, and you know, we're trying to have a discussion as well, so it's hard to keep up. Yeah. But I think that's really exciting, is that, you know, you can come and you can join us live. We try to be very consistent with when we do the podcast. Tuesdays are our normal day, but it's not unheard of for us to bump it to Wednesday, which had to happen today. So next episode is in 2 weeks. It is scheduled for the Tuesday, and we are going to be doing Finding Dory, which Chelsea and I saw yesterday, which is actually the reason we had to bump the podcast. When you do see that movie, it comes out this Friday in the United States. I'm sorry if it won't come out in your country yet by the time we do record that podcast, but please send us your thoughts, because I'm just going to give you a little tidbit or a little sneak peek. I was not excited to see Dory in the least, was not excited when this was announced, not excited on anything that I saw trailer wise. I was just not invested in this movie. I was really expecting it for just be a rehashing kind of replaying. I mean, the name even indicates that it's kind of similar, right? Like something is a person is lost, or we have to go back and find. It is very, very surprisingly enjoyable, and I really like it. So I'm excited to talk about that in 2 weeks. And then after that, we will also be doing The Secret Life of Pets. So those are the next two movies that just happen to come out. So see those in the next little bit when those come out, because that's what we'll be talking about basically for the next month.
New animation. Woohoo! So also send your voicemails. You can go to rotoscopers.com/voicemails, or you can call us at 406-646-6575. And then also we have our Patreon, as we mentioned earlier. You can go to Amazon, rotoscopers.com/Amazon, rotoscopers.com/Audible. And all these are ways for you to help support the podcast so that we are able to bring more content to you.
Also, rotoscopers.com/store. We still have some shirts, and they are very heavily discounted. I think they're about $6, which is basically the cost of the shirt, plus shipping. So we would like to just get rid of our surplus of shirts. So if you would like to buy a t-shirt, now's your chance. Go check it out. Rotoscopers.com/store. It helps support the show as well. Lots of ways. And then, of course, if none of those are doable for you at this point in time, just tell your friends.
Yeah, and leave us a review on iTunes. We did have a new review that came out yesterday. We had Dungiddy 468, who said, "You all are amazing," and gave us 5 stars. And he says, "I enjoy listening to the podcast whenever I have the chance." So thank you so much for leaving that review on iTunes. We really appreciate that.
Yeah.
And then also we have our social media outlets. So you want to find Morgan, you can type in Morgan Stradling on almost anything and you can find her. Same with me, with Chelsea Robson, except on Snapchat, where you have to do Chelsea M. Robson. But hey, it's all worth it, because I'm going to be slapping my hand in the face forever. Anyway, Mason, you can find him, Mason SMTX, on basically everything. And then MasonSmithPortfolio.com. Have you been updating that lately?
I haven't. I haven't had time. I'm going to have a ton of new material to put on it at the end of the summer.
Awesome. Okay, cool.
Busy boy.
He is.
Around career fair time, that's when I'm going to be beefing it up. It'll be in the early fall.
All right, guys. Until next time.
We are the
Rotoscopers.
You can never get that in sync.
You know, we'll figure it out sometime.